Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program of news and features is designed for people learning English. Today, we hear stories from Mario Ritter and Ashley Thompson. And, as always, we will close the show with an American story. But first, American President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un have agreed to meet in Singapore on June 12th. Singapore's position in Asia and diplomatic ties with the U.S. and North Korea make it a natural choice for the historic meeting. Trump announced the meeting in a tweet Thursday. Singapore is one of the few countries that have diplomatic relations with both North Korea and the United States. It is also considered a neutral place. The city-state of less than 6 million people is between Malaysia and Indonesia. The country has 700 square kilometers of land. That is about 3.5 times the size of Washington, D.C. Britain founded Singapore as a trading colony in 1819. It joined the Malaysian Federation in 1963, but became independent 2 years later. The country maintains strong international trading ties. It is a port city between the South China Sea and the Indian Ocean, on one of the busiest waterways in the world. Singapore is also a wealthy country, with incomes similar to those of leading European nations. The country has been ruled by one party since gaining independence in 1965. Protests cannot take place without permission. Movement is limited, and there are controls on media. Tom Plant is an expert on nuclear issues at London's Royal United Services Institute. He said Singapore is a great location for the meeting. Plant told the Associated Press that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will be on friendly territory, not hostile territory, but he wouldn't be on home turf. North Korea's state companies have, in the past, traded with Singaporean companies. Under pressure from the United States, Singapore officially stopped trade relations with North Korea in 2017. U.S. ties to Singapore are strong. The port city has long provided services to visiting U.S. Navy ships in the Asia-Pacific area. It is also the regional headquarters of large American companies, including Google, Facebook, and Airbnb. Former U.S. Ambassador to Singapore, David Adelman, said Singapore is the perfect location for the meeting. He said, "Singapore has been a great friend to the U.S., but also Singapore has carefully worked to be a friend to all, which has earned it trust in capitals around the world." Singapore's Ministry of Foreign Affairs said in a statement, "We hope this meeting will advance prospects for peace in the Korean Peninsula."
Iraqi citizens will vote for members of their national parliament on May 12th. It is the first such election since the government declared victory over the Islamic State group. Iraqi forces drove out the militant group from the country's north last year. Now, Iraqis hope that new leadership will fight another enemy: corruption. Many consider corruption to be the cause of years of war and economic problems. Nearly 7,000 candidates are seeking office. There are 329 seats in Iraq's parliament. After the vote, the government will carry out a series of negotiations. It is expected that one of the leaders of the Shia parties will be appointed prime minister. That position is Iraq's head of state. Iraq's government system is complex and based on a quota system. It calls for several groups to hold leadership positions. They include Shia and Sunni Muslims, the two biggest Muslim religious groups in the country. Kurds, other minorities, and women also are required to hold some of these jobs. Iraqi political expert Najem Al-Kassab told VOA that new political alliances are forming in the country, even among different religious groups. As a result, he said, no party is likely to gain a majority. So, a long series of negotiations will take place before the choosing of top positions, he said. It will be difficult for them to agree on the leadership, he said, because party alliances are no longer based on sectarian blocs. The current prime minister is Haider al-Abadi. He oversaw the defeat of IS militants in Iraq. But the upcoming vote and negotiations will be hard to predict, Al-Kassab said. For example, one political alliance in Iraq now includes well-known Shia leaders and non-religious parties, including the Communist Party. Unlike the election in 2014, Sunni voters are more likely to vote for al-Abadi's coalition because of the defeat of the IS. The militant group held mainly Sunni areas between 2014 and 2017. The conflict destroyed or severely damaged many Iraqi cities, towns, and villages. Al-Kassab said, rebuilding, improving the economy, and limiting corruption are most important to voters. However, meaningful change will be difficult. The people don't really care who is in power, said Al-Kassab. They are looking to rebuild after all the wars. I'm Mario Ritter.
When it comes to blockbusters, bigger and bolder is Hollywood's plan for this summer. movie studios are counting on new and improved sequels to make up for last summer's poor showing at theater box offices. Disney and Marvel have had a great start with Avengers: Infinity War. The superhero movie had the biggest worldwide opening weekend in history, with more than $640 million in tickets sold. And that does not include the market in China, where the movie just opened. The film's secret weapon? The largest ever group of superheroes, including Black Panther, explosive special effects in outer space, and an unpredictable ending. The film cost $320 million to make. But the Disney-Marvel studio has recovered its expenses many times over. As of Thursday, it has earned more than $1.2 billion at movie theaters. Infinity War's unusual storyline may also signal a change toward more imaginative big action films than in summers past. The darkly funny 2016 film Deadpool was such a success that 20th Century Fox has produced a sequel. Fans hope that Deadpool 2 will keep the humor and unexpected storytelling of the first in the series.
I'm a driver, and I'm a flyer. I waited a long time for a shot like this.
What do you think? Well, what do you know?
Walt Disney and Lucasfilm Studios are hoping to earn back the production cost of the science fiction film Solo, a Star Wars story. Oscar-winning filmmaker Ron Howard reshot 80% of the film after taking over when the original directors resigned. Howard's uncompromising demand for quality pushed production costs to over $250 million. The movie tells the story of the early years of Star Wars hero Han Solo and his hairy co-pilot Chewbacca.
I know why we're here. A rescue op. Save the dinosaurs from the island that's about to explode. What could go wrong?
Blue is alive. You raised her.
Bigger and More Frightening describe the latest Jurassic Park movie from Universal. Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom includes dinosaurs, naturally, but also an environmental appeal. Humans seek to save the huge animals from disappearing.
In 3.5 weeks, the Met will be hosting its annual ball. And we are going to rob it. Not the ball itself.
On the neck of Daphne Kluger.
Valued at over $100
million.
$150 million, actually.
The robbery comedy Ocean's 8 features diamonds, beautiful clothes, and fearless females. Sandra Bullock stars along with Kate Blanchett and Anne Hathaway. The film is an all-female version of Steven Soderbergh's Ocean's series. Warner Brothers Studios expects the film will be a big hit with girls and women. I'm Ashley Thompson.
Do you know that hundreds of years of struggle have been for you? You? Please, baby, take a minute. Don't lose your life on a Zoom. I put my arm around him. he started to weep. The tears came down. That was Tupac Shakur.
That is Maya Angelou. The subject this week of What It Takes, a podcast from the American Academy of Achievement. To listen to more, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Now it's time for an American story. Today we hear Dr. Heidegger's Experiment by Nathaniel Hawthorne.
That very unusual man, old Dr. Heidegger, once invited four friends to meet him in his office. There were three white-bearded gentlemen, Mr. Medbourne, Colonel Killigrew, and Mr. Gascoigne. And there was a thin old lady whose husband had died, so she was called the Widow Wycherly. They were all sad old creatures who had been unfortunate in life. As a young man, Mr. Medbourne had lost all his money in a badly planned business deal. Colonel Killigrew had wasted his best years and health enjoying the pleasures of women and drink. Mr. Gascoigne was a ruined politician with an evil past. As for the Widow Wycherly, tradition tells us that she was once a great beauty, but shocking stories about her past had led the people of the town to reject her, so she lived very much alone. It is worth stating that each of these three men were early lovers of the Widow Wycherly, and they had once been on the point of killing each other over her. "My dear old friends," said Dr. Heidegger, "I would like your help in one of my little experiments." He motioned for them to sit down. Dr. Heidegger's office was a very strange place. The dark room was filled with books, cobwebs, and dust. An old mirror hanging between two bookcases was said to show the ghosts of all the doctor's dead patients. On another wall hung a painting of the young woman Dr. Heidegger was to have married long ago, but she died the night before their wedding after drinking one of the doctor's medicines. The most mysterious object in the room was a large book covered in black leather. It was said to be a book of magic. On the summer afternoon of our story, a black table stood in the middle of the room. On it was a beautiful cut glass vase. Four glasses were also on the table. Dr. Heidegger was known for his unusual experiments, but his four guests did not expect anything very interesting. The doctor picked up his black leather book of magic. From its pages, he removed a dried-up old rose. "This rose," said the doctor, "was given to me 55 years ago by Sylvia Ward, whose painting hangs on this wall. I was to wear it at our wedding. Would you think it possible that this ancient rose could ever bloom again?" "Nonsense," said the Widow Wycherly with a toss of her head. "You might as well ask if an old woman's lined face could ever bloom again." "See," answered Dr. Heidegger. He reached for the vase and threw the dried rose into the water it contained. Soon, a change began to appear. The crushed and dried petals moved and slowly turned from brown to red. And there was the rose of half a century looking as fresh as when Sylvia Ward had first given it to her lover. "That is a very pretty trick," said the doctor's friends. "What is the secret?" "Did you ever hear of the Fountain of Youth?" asked Dr. Heidegger. "The Spanish explorer Ponce de Leon went in search of it centuries ago, but he was not looking in the right place. If I am rightly informed, the famous Fountain of Youth is in southern Florida. A friend of mine has sent me the water you see in the vase." The doctor filled the four glasses with water from the Fountain of Youth. The liquid produced little bubbles that rose up to the silvery surface. The old guests agreed to drink the water, although they did not believe in its power. "Before you drink, my friends," the doctor said, "you should draw up a few general rules as guidance before you pass a second time through the dangers of youth. You have had a lifetime of experience to direct you. Think what a shame it would be if the wisdom of your experiences did not act as a guide and teacher." The doctor's four friends answered him with a laugh. The idea that they would ever repeat the mistakes of their youth was very funny. "Drink, then," said the doctor. "I am happy that I have so well chosen the subjects of my experiment." They raised the glasses to their lips. If the liquid really was magical, it could not have been given to four human beings who needed it more. They seemed as though they had never known youth or pleasure. They looked like they had always been the weak, unhappy creatures who were bent over the doctor's table. They drank the water. There was an almost immediate improvement among the guests. A cheerful glow like sunshine brightened their faces. They looked at one another, imagining that some magic power had really started to smooth the lines on their faces. "Quick, give us more of this wondrous water," they cried. "We are younger, but we are still too old." "Patience," said Dr. Heidegger, who watched the experiment with scientific coolness. "You have been a long time growing old. Surely you could wait half an hour to grow young." Again, he filled their glasses. The four guests drank the liquid in one swallow. As the liquid passed down their throats, it seemed to change their whole systems. Their eyes grew clear and bright. Their hair turned from silver to darker shades.
"My dear widow, you are lovely," cried Colonel Killigrew, who watched as the signs of age disappeared from her face. The widow ran to the mirror. The three men started to behave in such a way that proved the magic of the Fountain of Youth's water. Mr. Gascoigne's mind turned to political topics. He talked about nationalism and the rights of the people. He also told secrets softly to himself. All this time, Colonel Killigrew had been shouting out happy drinking songs while his eyes turned towards the curvy body of the widow Wycherly. Mr. Medbourne was adding dollars and cents to pay for a proposed project. It would supply the East Indies with ice by linking a team of whales to the polar icebergs. As for the widow Wycherly, she stood in front of the mirror, greeting her image as a friend she loved better than anything in the world. "My dear old doctor," she cried, "please give me another glass." The doctor had already filled the glasses again. It was now near sunset, and the room was darker than ever. But a moon-like light shined from within the vase. The doctor sat in his chair, watching. As the four guests drank their third glass of water, they were silenced by the expression on the doctor's mysterious face. The next moment, the exciting rush of young life shot through their blood. They were now at the happy height of youth. The endless cares, sadness, and diseases of age were remembered only as a troubled dream from which they had awoken. "We are young," they cried. The guests were a group of happy youngsters, almost crazy with energy. They laughed at the old-fashioned clothing they wore. They shouted happily and jumped around the room. The widow Wycherly, if such a young lady could be called a widow, ran to the doctor's chair and asked him to dance.
"Please excuse me," answered the doctor quietly. "My dancing days were over long ago, but these three young men would be happy to have such a lovely partner."
The men began to argue violently about who would dance with her. They gathered around the widow, each grabbing for her. Yet by a strange trick, owing to the darkness of the room, the tall mirror is said to have reflected the forms of three old gray men competing for a faded old woman. As the three fought for the woman's favor, they reached violently for each other's throats. In their struggle, they turned over the table. The vase broke into a thousand pieces. The water of youth flowed in a bright stream across the floor. The guests stood still. A strange coldness was slowly stealing over them all. They looked at Dr. Heidegger, who was holding his treasured rose. The flower was fading and drying up once more. The guests looked at each other and saw their looks changing back. "Are we grown old again so soon?" they cried. In truth, they had. The water of youth had powers that were only temporary.
"Yes, friends, you are old again," the doctor said, "and the water of youth lies wasted on the ground. But even if it flowed in a river at my door, I still would not drink it. This is the lesson you have taught me."
But the doctor's four friends had learned no such lesson. They decided at that moment to travel to Florida and drink morning, noon, and night from the fountain of youth.
And that's our show. We'll return tomorrow, same time, same place. Hope you do too. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.